This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The sexual abuse scandals in the Catholic Church have raised many questions about the priesthood. For example, could we prevent this type of problem if priests were allowed to marry? My guest, Father James Martin, recently wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times titled Choosing Celibacy, in which he discussed the reasons for this tradition and its value in the life of a priest. Father Martin is a Jesuit priest and associate editor of America, a national Catholic magazine. He joined the Jesuits after 6 years in the corporate world. 2 years ago, he published a memoir titled In Good Company, The Fast Track from the Corporate World to Poverty, Chastity, and Obedience. You say that many Americans don't understand celibacy, that they see it at best as misguided and at worst as masochistic, and they say, what kind of sick person would willingly give up sex? What is the reason for celibacy in the priesthood as you understand it?
Well, as I understand it, celibacy is meant to free a person up for unselfish service to God and to other people. And I always tell people the reason for celibacy is really to help people love other people, love many other people very deeply. It's not for everybody. It's not meant to be for everybody. It's not better or worse than married life or single life. But for some people, it's a wonderful way of serving God.
You became a priest after about 6 years in the corporate world, working for GE.
That's right.
You were already an experienced man of the world when you became a priest. How did you feel then about the prospect of forsaking sexual life? You were in a different position than the teenager who decides to become a priest, who hasn't experienced the world as an adult yet.
Well, that's a good question. You know, honestly, I didn't really consider it too much, and that's a little embarrassing to say, but I went into the priesthood without much sexual experience and, you know, kind of thought it would be an easy thing to give up for me. As it turns out, it wasn't. Celibacy is very difficult. I think chastity is probably the most difficult of the three vows for a Jesuit to live. That's poverty, chastity, and obedience. But to be honest with you, even at age 28, I don't think I really reflected on the challenges of celibacy and what that would really mean for me. I saw it as something that would probably be easy to give up. And looking back on it, I think that was pretty foolish.
So what was the most difficult part of it? What did you feel like, in retrospect, you were naive about?
I guess the propensity to fall in love, even when you are living a vow of chastity. I think that somehow I thought, I can't believe sort of looking back how naive I was, but that somehow by just sort of taking the vow, that would preclude my falling in love, and that would preclude my desiring intimacy. But I think one of the things you learn about chastity is that one grows into it, and also one learns, the real need that everybody has for really deep intimacy.
Excuse this question, which is probably naive. I should probably already know the answer to this, but the truth is that I don't. Do you have to be a virgin when you become a priest, or can you just like begin a life of celibacy after entering the priesthood?
The latter. You don't have to be a virgin when you enter. Mm-hmm. In fact, most people these days who are entering in their mid-20s and early 30s are probably not. I mean, I couldn't say, but I think most of my friends who entered were not. So, yeah, virginity is really different than celibacy. And I think I think vocations would be really down if they only accepted virgins.
But a lot of people probably enter the priesthood as virgins. The younger people who enter, who have never experienced sexuality at all, do you think that a life of celibacy becomes more difficult for them because they don't even know what it is they've given up? And the temptation of that might be so great because it's something that you've never had.
I think that's a good question. I'm not sure your question about younger people entering as virgins. I think, you know, just sort of anecdotally from people that I speak with, I don't think that's the case. And also remember, a lot of the people who are entering these days are entering at a much older age, particularly in diocesan seminaries. But the other question about not having had experience, I think it would make it more difficult. I think, if you did enter without having sexual experience, or I think more to the point, without being in a very intimate relationship with another person, I think you always would wonder, you know, what it is like and what I'm giving up. But frankly, it's the same thing with people, I think, who enter right out of college. I know a lot of people who entered very early on who wonder, you know, what it would be like to hold a job, what it would be like to have their own apartment, things like that. So I think in general, people realize these days, the more experience people have in all different parts of life, the better it is for them when they eventually become a priest.
In the Jewish religion, rabbis are usually expected to have a family. Mm-hmm. Ministers, too, I think, are usually, you know, expected to have a family. Can you imagine being a priest and being married?
Yeah, I can. Quite frankly, I'm for optional celibacy. I think, you know, it's not for everybody, and I really don't think that it needs to be a requirement in the church. I think, frankly, the strongest reason for that is the fact that I know many people who are married who feel called to priesthood. But really, from the beginning, it was never an issue of doctrine. It was more an issue of sort of church law. And even as far back as the 16th century, they said that the church said that it would be something that would be easy to change, unlike, say, you know, the doctrine of the Trinity or something like that.
We're talking about celibacy for priests in the church. My guest is Father James Martin. He's a Jesuit priest and associate editor of America, a national Catholic magazine. He's also the author of several books, including In Good Company, The Fast Track from the Corporate World to Poverty, Chastity, and Obedience. There are several theories about how chastity might figure into the current sex abuse scandal. Mm-hmm. One theory is that young men who become priests who have no sexual experience also often don't have much sexual understanding. They haven't gotten that understanding through experience. The church doesn't usually teach human sexuality in an effective way. And these men, these young priests, don't know how to deal with their own sexual urges. And so those urges can get expressed in harmful ways.
Well, I think that may have been the case 40 or 50 years ago, but honestly, I mean, in the last, say, 10 or 20 years, there's been an enormous amount of attention given to the education of seminarians and people in religious formation. That would be members of religious orders like the Jesuits and Franciscans and Dominicans, to ensure that they have a healthy understanding of their own sexuality. And, you know, in point of fact, I often, you know, tell my friends who are married that I think priests and Jesuits and whatnot talk about sexuality much more because we're constantly being sort of counseled, and we go to courses, and we, you know, read about it and we study about it. So I think that might have been the case 40 or 50 years ago, but certainly these days it would be very difficult for someone to go through a mainstream seminary or one of the larger religious orders without having to sort of come face-to-face with your own sexuality and the challenges that are really inherent in celibacy.
What do you study when you study human sexuality?
Well, we study human sexuality sort of from a psychological standpoint. We also study sort of the history of celibacy. I think more to the point, it's a lot of counseling that goes on with your superiors. It's a lot of discussions that go on with your spiritual directors, that is the person you would talk to about your spiritual life. You know, a lot of us will go to psychiatrists and psychologists to make sure we understand everything about our sexuality. So it's pretty extensive. I mean, from the first year of my novitiate as a Jesuit, we talked about chastity and celibacy and sexuality a lot. And the other thing is, it's not something that happens in a vacuum. I mean, I speak with, I think this is the case for most young priests. You know, I still have, obviously, friends that I had before I entered the Jesuits, and so I talk to them about their experiences. I talk to married friends. I talk to single friends. So I think it's pretty in-depth. At least it was for me. I can't speak for everybody. But I feel that certainly, you know, the amount of time that I spent on thinking and praying about sexuality and chastity was a lot, frankly. I think it was more than we talked about poverty, let's put it that way.
So you don't think that chastity is one of the major factors in the current sex abuse scandal in the church. What are your thoughts about why there has been so much sexual abuse?
Well, you know, I always say it's not a question of chastity or not chastity. It's a question of healthy and unhealthy. It's a difficult question. I think I would point to a couple of factors. First of all is the unwillingness of some of the people in the hierarchy to really confront some of these priests who have these problems. I would say that secondly, there's just an awkwardness and a discomfort when it comes to speaking about sexuality among members of the hierarchy who are, you know, in their 60s and 70s, and I think just weren't brought up to talk about those kinds of things. Third of all, I think that this notion of the hierarchy as always being right and people being unwilling to kind of challenge that. And fourth, just, you know, a desire, misguided as we see, to protect the institutional church. And when you combine all of those things, and you combine that with some people who may have had a very unhealthy sexuality that should have been weeded out of the seminaries and the priesthood earlier, you know, you have this horrible problem. And then there's also the tendency to, I think, be overly forgiving towards some priests at the expense of some of the victims. And once again, all those things thrown together make it, as we can see, or as we've seen, a very dangerous place.
How do you think the sex abuse scandal is affecting affecting Catholics in America?
I think they're very demoralized, very sad, confused. It's really devastating. I think unlike some people compare it to the crisis that surrounded the publication of the encyclical on birth control, Humanae Vitae, in 1968, and the sort of reaction to that. But I think the difference is this hits people, you know, very personally. It's your pastor who you know. It's a family who you know down the street. So it's a very personal and very sensitive part of a person's psyche that this is affecting. And I think that's making it all the more difficult for people. And I also think that, you know, as I do, they look at the actions of some of the bishops, not all of the bishops, but some of the bishops, and just scratch their heads and say, I simply do not understand why a priest who had been sort of a serial abuser was moved from parish to parish. And quite frankly, I don't either. And I'm, you know, I'm sad myself. I find it very disturbing. By the same token, I think you have to understand that Catholics do not sort of place their faith, so to speak, in the hierarchy. I mean, they trust in the hierarchy. That's a very important part of Catholicism. But their faith is in Jesus Christ, and their faith is in the Holy Spirit guiding the church. So I think most Catholics are sophisticated enough to be able to distinguish between the hierarchy and their faith. Thank God.
My guest is Father James Martin. He's a Jesuit priest and the associate editor of the Catholic magazine America. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Father James Martin, and he is a Jesuit priest. He's also associate editor of America, which is a national Catholic magazine. He's the author of several books. His latest is called In Good Company, The Fast Track from the Corporate World to Poverty, Chastity, and Obedience. Father Martin, you became a priest after about 6 years in the corporate world. Why did you leave the corporate life to become a priest? That's really, from GE to the priesthood is a big lifestyle change.
Yeah, it was. There's a short answer to that question, and the answer is I was miserable. I was working for GE for 6 years, and I remember thinking at the time that the logic of my life was rather circular. I worked so I could make money, so I could buy clothes and food and support myself, and so I could work, which didn't seem to make too much sense. And I was working more and more. I was working human resources with GE Capital, which is their financial services arm, and getting more and more disenchanted with the way that my life was going, and was getting very stressed out. One night I came home and turned on the TV late at night, and there was a TV show on PBS about Thomas Merton, the Trappist monk, and I found it fascinating. He too had, although in the 1930s, had given up, life in quote-unquote the world to enter a Trappist monastery, and that just appealed to me, and I started reading more about religious life, and one thing led to another, and I entered the Jesuits, quite frankly, with very little reflection as I look back on it, but it worked out.
Did you find many men your age?
Oh, yeah. Most of the people that I entered with were, I entered when I was 28 years old, and most of the people in the novitiate were peers or older. One guy I entered with was a college professor. One guy had been in the Air Force. Another fellow had been in the priesthood, actually, the diocesan priesthood before any of the Jesuits. So, you know, a lot of different types of experience, which I think makes for healthier priests, quite frankly, and priests that can understand the challenges that, you know, people face day to day.
I've seen so many old movies in which the mother cries out of happiness because her son is becoming a priest, and she so much wants one of her sons to be a priest, and she's so proud. You say that when you decided to become a priest, your mother cried, but that's because she was so upset. She really didn't want you to do it. Why not?
No, she didn't. I think that's the case for some guys today. She saw me as, you know, giving up a family. I think the fact that she wouldn't have grandchildren. No, thank God my sister's had a child a couple years ago, so that made her happy. Yeah, and also, people don't know priests these days. There are fewer and fewer of us around, and so there's a lot of mystery about what the life of a priest is really like. I remember my mother years later told me that she thought she would never see me again, that you know, I'd be sort of locked up. And quite frankly, my friends were just as shocked and horrified. A lot of them thought I was crazy. And
well, you say a lot of them thought that you were running away from responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I always tell people I was running away from some things. I was running away from the corporate world that I thought was, for me, very deadening. And I was running towards something that I, you know, I really hope would give my life more meaning. Interestingly, most of my friends who were reluctant to sort of accept the fact that I was entering the priesthood only really understood it when they met other Jesuits. That was the thing that helped them understand what I was doing. And now they're all, you know, really all of my friends from college and from work are used to it. And, you know, I do a lot of weddings and baptisms and things like that, which is great. And they keep me sane and they keep me honest, too. You know, it's very hard to be sort of overly pious and overly spiritual among, you know, people who saw you get drunk during college.
Right. Something you say in your book, In Good Company, really struck me, because I have a feeling it's true of a lot of people, although we don't necessarily think of it in these terms. You say that your religious education stopped when you were about 10, and that's about mm-hmm. when you stopped going to church, so that your idea of religion kind of froze from a children's perspective, and mm-hmm. that you grew up equipped with only a child's view of religion and faith. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, you know, I think these days most Catholics, or many Catholics, shall we say, they go to CCD, which is sort of Sunday school, and they might continue that until confirmation. And, you know, if you don't go to a Catholic high school or a Catholic college, your religious education pretty much stops. And you are equipped with, as I said in this In Good Company book, this basically, you know, fourth grade understanding of what is a sin, what is a sacrament, what does it mean to live a good life, you know, which is fine when you're in fourth grade. But when you're, you know, in your 20s and 30s, it doesn't work very well. I often tell people, you know, it's like ceasing your education in mathematics at fourth grade and, you know, being expected to kind of, you know, be in the real world and, you know, understand things. It just doesn't work. But I think that's the situation for a lot of Catholics. And I think that's why, you know, Catholics have such a hard time sometimes grappling with issues of papal infallibility, of doctrine, of dogma, of, you know, what it means to be a Catholic, because frequently their education as Catholics stopped at, you know, childhood. I find this a lot of times in the confessional without revealing any secrets. People will confess something. They'll say, well, is that a sin, yes or no? You know, it's this kind of black and white understanding that they may have learned from, you know, Sunday school in fourth grade, which, you know, doesn't, I think, equip you very well to live as an adult Catholic.
And is there a thing that you think you can do to contribute to a more adult understanding, a more in-depth, complicated understanding of Catholicism?
Yeah, I've always thought that what the Church really needs to do is, I mean, this sounds really banal, but, you know, a more adult education and inviting people to learn more about their faith and to sort of reflect on their faith and reflect on moral questions. But it's a very difficult thing to do, I think, because once someone has that idea of Catholicism in their mind as this sort of black and white yes or no faith that's cemented in them as a child, when you talk to them about nuance, when you talk to them about church teaching and, for example, church history, sometimes they get upset and they feel that you're trying to, well, excuse things, or you're trying to, you know, deny what they've learned. So, for example, if let's say we're going to talk about celibacy in a married priesthood, if someone was taught in the fourth grade that, you know, this is the way it's always been, when you talk to them about church history and say, for example, you know, look at the early church, look at St. Peter, they feel like you're trying to, you know, sort of undermine what they've learned and what they see as their faith, which they find sometimes very threatening. So it's very difficult. I think it's a question of kind of inviting people to more adult reflection through education, books, things like that.
You said that when you became a priest, you entered the priesthood really naively. At what point did you really have confidence that you'd made the right decision?
Oh, that took a while. As a Jesuit, you have about 11 years of training before ordination. And I think it's sort of a gradual process. The time that I really knew that I was meant to be a Jesuit, I think, was when I was working in Africa with refugees. I spent 2 years helping refugees start small businesses, and I experienced this wonderful sense of just being in the right place and in the right time and doing exactly what I should be, which was the opposite of my experience at work, where I felt that I was in the wrong place. So I remember it came very powerfully one day that you're in the right place, and yes, this is where you should be. And that was, for me, you know, a wonderful confirmation of my choice.
Well, Father Martin, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Father James Martin wrote a memoir titled In Good Company, The Fast Track from the Corporate World to Poverty, Chastity, and Obedience. This August, his new book will be published, titled Searching for God at Ground Zero. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.